You know what? I just got a call from Yuma, Arizona. In order, the first bill we have before us, committee substitute for Senate Bill 339, an act relating to the management and disposal of state land and resources relating to certain remote parcels, entry lands, purchase contracts, and patents, and sponsored by the governor. And here to speak on that is Mr. Johansson, Director of Parks. Neil?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Neil Johansson, Director of State Parks, and I'd like to provide a brief statement for CSSB 339. The Alaska Land Act has a sort of a long and convoluted history that goes back 35 years. It's grown to 200 pages, and it is the hope of the Department of Natural Resources that over the next few years we could seek some amendments to try to clarify and streamline much of the statute. 339 makes relatively few adjustments against this 200 pages of law. It amends the Alaska Land Act, and I would like to provide, in the interest of time, a very brief sectional analysis of 339. Sections 1 through 8 creates a more streamlined land disposal process. Sections 9 through 10 designs a new land disposal programs through regulation to basically create a more easy for the public to understand statutes. Section 11 authorizes the commissioner to do certain reconveyances to trade native allotments out of state conservation units such as state parks. I might mention that Section 11 was passed by the House as a Senate Bill 293 a couple nights ago. Basically, it's exact duplicate of this section. Sections 12 through 14 allows for persons to purchase state land without being present at a lottery or an auction, which was found to violate the Equal Protection Clause of our Constitution. Section 15 deals with a technical problem, offers a definition of adjacent, of the word adjacent, for purposes of disposals and land appraisals. Section 16 requires state land leaseholders to return a property to a marketable condition by removing personal property. As all of you know, the department leases a lot of lands and often reclaims properties that are in default through sales, and this would require the owners of those leases to basically clean up the junk that often is found on those properties after they've been used. Section 17 to 18 allows the commissioner to reach a finding that certain timber sales can lose substantial value because of insects, fire, or disease, and to more quickly sell that timber by bypassing longer, more cumbersome bureaucratic processes. Section 19 amends 3805 to remove restrictions on DNR's ability to delay an oil and gas lease sale for more than 90 days. That is also contained in exact language, which is on its way to the governor's desk. Section 20 amends 3805 to eliminate overly broad provisions allowing land to be closed to mining, even closing land with existing valid mining claim rights on it. Section 21 clarifies mining claim ownership by aliens or foreign corporations. Now only foreign corporations or foreign citizens from countries offering like privileges in their country can own claims in Alaska, yet there have never been determinations made by either the U.S. government or the state of Alaska as to which countries those might be. Section 22 simplifies adjustments to be made in the annual rental amounts due on mining claims and leases. This amendment to 3805.211 more clearly identifies the consumer price index on which changes are to be based. Sections 23 to 24 simplifies mining leasing procedures and creates more modern terms for annual rents, leases, and restrictions. You should be doing this. Section 25 creates more reasonable terms for miners to file lease paperwork without the possibility of a sudden termination of their claim rights. Finally, Mr. Chairman, sections 26 through 34 increases the fees for home sites and homesteads before a patent to attempt to defray some of the department's administrative costs, and basically clarifies home site entry and lottery procedures. I would end my brief testimony by many of these items in 339 are basically housekeeping amendments to a lot of cumbersome statutes. It is the intent of the department to return in future years with additional changes to Title 38 to try to get rid of some of the redundant language. There's multiple definitions of land appraisal, et cetera, to try to make it an easier statute for the department and for the people to understand.
Hey, Representative Gusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 12 of this bill on the private ownership and disposal of lands to private ownership there, we went around and around on this for years because it'd be parcels of land that would be available in some small communities. And what was happening is disposals were being held in the larger communities. For example, Juneau being a large community, or Fairbanks or Anchorage. And we changed at that time that the soil shall be done in that small community, or the actual auction sale. So if somebody was really interested in it, they would go to that location and submit their bids along with the locals. Now I'm afraid we're back into the situation which just about everybody disagreed with at that time, that now it can be done in Juneau or in Anchorage, or the true Alaskan living out there has the expense of having to fly in, come around, sit around, and they indeed know exactly where the parcel is and what they want to do with it and will use it, as opposed to somebody who is speculating or thinking about a summer home or whatever it is. Why was that changed back to May?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drusendorf, I'm Jerry Gallagher with the Department of Natural Resources, and there's two changes that you have to look at together. First of all, there is a provision in statute which the courts have found unconstitutional, which is that an applicant has to be present at the auction of a land sale. The state Supreme Court in 1989 found that an unconstitutional provision. That change is in here. But this second change right now the department is required to hold those sales in the community, and this change is in there to give the department some flexibility whether or not to hold it in a community or not. This is an issue. I understand your point about how it should be done, and we probably would like to do that, but sometimes the costs are excessive. And this sort of goes with the other change that doesn't require an applicant to be at the sale. We just want to make our lives a little more efficient and give us the discretion, in some cases, not to hold it in specific communities.
Mr. Chairman, one of the things that when you say make our life a little bit more easy, and a lot of times I see statutes and changes that simply make the department's life easier and not necessarily to the benefit of the public, and that's what basically concerns me. But it would be your intent in your policy to do what we're presently doing as much as you possibly can, or just simply say, no, everything in Southeast is going to be out of Juneau, everything in the interior is going to be out of Fairbanks, everything in the...
Right. I can assure you that we would like to continue to hold those sales in those communities. I think it's fair to the folks there, but I don't have to tell you about the difficult budget situations, and sometime now or in the future, that simply becomes difficult. So I think we'd like to continue it as long as we could, but we'd also like the option not to spend the, in some cases, thousands of dollars that it costs to hold that sale there.
Yeah, I think to expedite things this morning, let's get to the formal amendments that we had before us, but let me ask, was there anyone else in the audience who would be heard on this bill? If you could come forward, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Angela Chung. I was born in Nome, raised in Anchorage, and where I currently reside. I'm here for the first time in Juneau as a volunteer for the Alaska Environmental Lobby. The lobby represents a coalition of 20 environmental groups from around the state. We appreciate the chair's decision to take the time to examine this very complex bill that the Hickel administration tells us will touch every resident of Alaska. This bill proposes changes in the state's management of lands, waters, forests, mineral deposits, gas, and oil. The Alaska Environmental Lobby has little objection to the majority of proposed changes outlined in SB 339. We agree with the administration that certain provisions in Title 38 are outmoded and that some updating is required to comply with court decisions and constitutional issues. However, we feel that Sections 17 and 18 of SB 339 may substantially reduce public involvement and adversely affect our state forested lands and their associated ecosystems. We recommend that you delete these two sections. Section 17 would allow the Department of Natural Resources to offer salvage sales of timber on land that will be converted to non-forest uses or timber that DNR determines will lose economic value or perpetuate insect or disease epidemics if not salvaged within 2 years. Section 18 would expand DNR's power to negotiate timber sales in areas where certain conditions exist or will exist within 2 years. These conditions include high levels of local unemployment or timber that will lose its economic value due to insects, disease, or fire. The lobby opposes Sections 17 and 18 as written because salvage sales could be offered as negotiated timber sales that would be exempt from AS 3805-115. This statute currently limits negotiated sales to no more than 500,000 board feet in 1 year and requires that within a one-year period, the commissioner advertise the negotiation of a sale to the same purchaser. The commissioner of DNR would be given extraordinary latitude in determining and even predicting future forest health, employment levels, and timber values because Section 18 inserts the language, quote, or will exist in 2 years. Existing statute AS 3805-113, Section C, already provides DNR with the authority to execute emergency timber sales that are exempt from the 5-year sale schedule requirements. It is our understanding that salvage sales fall under the classification of emergency sale and therefore are also exempt from the 5-year schedule requirements. Salvage sale provisions in Sections 17 and 18 would create a loophole allowing large-scale, long-term negotiated timber sales to occur in areas where DNR claims that forest health problems exist or could exist in 2 years. Existing statute AS 3805-118 states that the period of a negotiated timber sale contract can be up to 25 years. Consideration for salvage sales would only be given to the economic value of timber, while ignoring other values such as subsistence, recreation, fish and wildlife. Arguments that salvage sales would improve forest health and remedy forest insect epidemics are unfounded. Many biologists and forest ecologists believe that forest insect epidemics are often self-regulating and can actually improve habitat for many types of wildlife. Records indicate that bark beetle outbreaks in Alaska have occurred regularly over the past 70 years, and most likely for hundreds, if not thousands, of years before records were kept. Without negative impacts to overall forest health. In a recent publication by the Association of Forest Service Employees for Environmental Ethics, Drs. Partridge and Bertinoli, two forest pathologists, wrote that, quote, few, if any, attempts at direct control of forest insects or disease have been at all successful, and many more did more damage than the problem did, unquote. In conclusion, we ask that you delete Sections 17 and 18 of SB 339. Many of the forest health problems we face in Alaska are the result of unwise management activities. It is highly unlikely that salvage logging will improve forest health. Rather, salvage sales would be poor public policy and the likely target of public criticism and legal actions. If economic value of timber is the only concern, then current law and regulations, which have been the result of hard work by the forest industry and other affected user groups, should be adequate to provide for timely harvest of timber that is dead or dying. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chung.
Ms. Chung?
Representative Martin.
Yes, Ms. Chung, the report that you did there on forest rehabilitation to beetle infestation, do you know if that study was done on the forest in Idaho, Washington, or was it Northern California versus Alaska?
I don't know the answer to that question. I do know that it was not done in Alaska, but I don't know which state it was.
That's what I mean. The Alaska study shows that the reforestation does not happen as much as it does in the lower 48 because you have germinization and nutrients that are not frozen up or not dead before they have a chance, and that reforestation by nature is not as replenishing as if we did it by our studies show that we actually plant the trees and reforestate ourselves and clear the underbrush, then you'd have a better chance.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, we have some amendments before us, and let's start with the one that I believe is introduced by the administration, Mr. Johansson. It's identified as dot one. Starting on page 1, line 3.
Mr. Chairman, this is not an amendment that I guess is technically offered by the administration, but it's one that was crafted with the Alaska Railroad, Department of Transportation, and Chugach Electric. And we support the amendment as it has been written. And Mr. Hickey, I think, has a statement on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Mark Hickey. I represent the Alaska Railroad Corporation. Very briefly, the amendment would accomplish three things. Section 1 of the proposed section would authorize the Commissioner of Natural Resources or provide the authority to the Commissioner to convey a property interest to the Alaska Railroad for a new right-of-way within Chugach State Park along the Seward Highway. And it specifies that the level of interest to be conveyed shall be equivalent to that which the railroad attained when the state purchased the railroad in 1985. Sections 2 and 3 are similar in nature. They relate to the same area and provide authority to the commissioner to grant, in this case of item 2, an easement to the Department of Transportation Public Facilities for the relocated highway. And section 3 addresses relocation of Chugach's distribution and transmission lines. The reason for the amendment: the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities is in the process of reconstructing and realigning the Seward Highway between Bird Point and Girdwood. This, and part of this is within Chugach State Park. The highway is coming down off the hill and taking over railroad right-of-way along Turnagain Arm. In turn, the railroad is being relocated upland. The relocation allows the road to, it's a bit safer, it's a straighter alignment, gets out of some avalanche chutes. So as a result, the railroad is moving on to new right-of-way as well as the other facilities involved. And since it's within the state park, specific legislative authorization is needed for the commissioner to take these actions.
Okay, discussion on amendment number one. Does someone wish to move amendment number one? Representative Brown.
Thank you. And could you comment on the electric transmission line easement? Or what is the purpose?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, in all three cases here, DOT, the railroad, and Chugach Electric, it's all being, they all have to be moved as a result of the highway relocation. And, you know, the basically, I think that what has pushed it is trying to get it down from the more of the upper hillside where there are constant problems in the winter with avalanches, taking out transmission lines, covering a highway, etc. And this was something that Al Miners, the superintendent of Chugach State Park, and DOT and Chugach Electric and the railroad negotiated this. We were prepared to oppose trying to do something like this, but it was possible to get all the parties together just last week and reach agreement on it. It's the best thing for the park. It's the best thing for the parties to do this.
Okay,
we'll move the amendment then.
Okay, Representative Hanley moves amendment number one. Do we have any objections to amendment number one? Hearing none, then, amendment number one has been adopted. The next two amendments are by Representative Brown. The first one is on page 9. Well, they're both on page 9. Which one do you want to take first, Representative Brown?
Let's take the one that begins at, let's see, hang on for 1 second. Let's take the one that would delete the material. It begins on line 15 through line 23, delete all material.
Okay. That would be number 2, and the other one will be number 3. Representative Brown on number 2.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I could ask Mr. Boutin to comment on how you would determine the substantial or the loss of substantial economic value, and specifically whether that would be a balancing that would look at both the actual value of the trees as well as the cost of salvage. I mean, would it be a complete analysis? How would you do that exactly?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Tom Boutin, Division of Forestry at DNR. The very limited circumstances where a quick response would be needed in forest salvage sale, the economic value would be determined, and I guess I should back up. This only Section 17A only exempts the state from this two-year planning requirement, being in the two-year plan. All the other provisions, and additionally the Forest Practices Act and Protection of Fish Habitat and Water Quality, et cetera, are all required. It's just this 5-year harvest schedule, which is our planning document, the requirement that every sale has to have been in there for the two prior years. That's the exemption we're talking about. And so therefore, other values that are required in the law, be they habitat values or water quality, those are all still required in the law. Economic value, however, does refer to the timber. The spruce bark beetle that Representative Martin was talking about, in year one, the timber still has value, but it is once it's hit, there's no recovery. It's dead. In year two, the value is significantly diminished, and we're looking at chips instead of lumber or veneer. And in year three, the chips are of a very low quality, and thereafter, the timber falls over. And in my observation, any place on the Kenai and up in the Copper River, and it has no economic value. And that's the economic value that we're talking about.
And are these not covered under the existing exemption for emergency sales?
The emergency regulations, which were promulgated 18 or 24 months ago, haven't been useful. The Department of Law advised that since the only point of the regulations are to exempt from this 113, that we'd better have a timber sale which in its entirety would be over within 1 year. And because much of, especially the spruce bark beetle epidemic, is where you've got to have frozen ground to log, that the emergency regulations just haven't been useful. We just can't get our act together and get it logged oftentimes within that 12-month period. The one time that the emergency regulations were tried for the Falls Creek sale as a response to the bark beetle outside of Soldotna, an environmental organization, or a number of environmental organizations, wrote a single response, which the Department of Law concurred and said, you better pull in your horns. That was before I went to work for Division of Forestry, but I have examined.
Okay. Representative Brown, will you move amendment number 2 and we'll continue discussion?
I'll move amendment number 2.
Okay.
Speaking to subsection B that's proposed in the amendment to be deleted, why is it necessary to exempt the salvage sales offered as a negotiated sale? Why exempt those from 115? And in particular, that's one of the things that limits selling more than 500,000 board feet to a single purchaser. Why are we exempting these sales from that section?
Because some salvage sales would best able to be larger than 500,000 board feet, particularly a 500,000 board foot limit would have in many instances, especially thinking now on the Kenai in response to the bark beetle, have loggers tripping over one another. So 500,000 board feet, 100 truckloads, oftentimes is just a very small sale. Additionally, the one-year limitation comes in too, I believe.
Further discussion on amendment number 2. Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When you're talking about salvage sales, and I know that anything that's dead and standing with bark on, and worse yet, if it's dead and on the ground, it definitely will not last 2 years on the ground, because the bark, you actually have to either split it or peel it. And I find the proposal here, basically agreeable and acceptable. There's some cases like a birch or something hits the ground, and after 1 year, mm-hmm. it's punk, and you can't do anything with it. Popple, too. So I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the question's been called. Would the clerk please call the question?
Representative Parnell.
No.
Representative Terrio.
No.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Grusendorf.
No.
Representative Hanley.
No.
Representative Hoffman.
Yes.
Representative Martin.
No.
Representative Navar.
No.
Representative McLean. Representative Larson.
No. Please note that amendment number 2 has failed adoption. Amendment number 3, Representative Brown.
We're talking about spruce, though.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 3.
Any objections? Any objections, Representative Brown?
Mr. Chairman, this would, in that section that we did not delete under the last amendment, make the commissioner have a written finding rather than a determination, and would provide that the loss of substantial economic value cannot be practically mitigated by other means, and then would delete the exemption from the provisions of 115. And what 115 does is says that you can do sales, these negotiated sales, without advertisement of the conditions and terms. And I think that while there's, you know, arguably reasons to expedite these sales, it seems like we still should have some public process associated with it, in that the changes proposed in this amendment would strengthen that. Be sure that we do have public process as well as conformance to the sustained yield principle. Maybe I could ask Mr. Boutin why it's a problem to have these sales be subject to the sustained yield principle, since it seems like it's part of the whole thing you're trying to achieve.
I hadn't thought of sustained yield is required on all state lands in a variety of statutes in Title 41 and as well as Title 38 and the Constitution. So I've not thought about Section 17 exempting this state land from sustained yield, and that isn't possible and wouldn't be desirable if it was.
How about the public process?
The public process in 3805112 would still be required, I believe.
Now that deals with forest land use plans,
yes.
Not with these specific exempt sales or salvage sales.
But 112 does apply to all sales and would continue to apply, by the way, even upon enactment and signed into law 310, except for sales of 50,000 board feet or less, which is 10 truckloads. So there is public process still required. The other day, the lady from Fairbanks that handed out the public process, well, that if you have that shows that 112 would still be required.
Well, Ms. Chairman, just looking at 112, it doesn't say anything about sales. Everything in here is talking about the process necessary to adopt a forest land use plan.
Which is required. That's what we use to substantiate our finding document, and that's required of all sales.
So,
go on, then Representative Grusendorf.
I was just trying to understand this. So there would be, you're saying we're going to go through this process and adopt these forest land use plans, and then there's some kind of new change that requires quick action in response to the beetle epidemic. Are you going to go back and redo the land use plans before you have these salvage sales for the beetles?
The forest land use plan is our site-specific forest plan, and we use it to substantiate the finding document. Section 17 addresses in A our very separate, not related, five-year timber harvest schedule, which is our planning document, and then B speaks to negotiated sales being limited to 500,000 board feet and the 1 year. So we still have public process and would have public process for salvage sales.
In that they would have to be specifically identified in under 112 in a land use plan before you
could
have
one. Yes, and forest land use plans have both an agency and a municipal comment period and a public comment period.
Okay, Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the amendment here, I am interested in the first part of it where it says written finding as opposed to a determination, and that could be useful to local political subdivisions, to the public, to the legislative body. It leaves a paper trail, which is also good for the industry. And I think it's important that we have something so we know, not just the determination. And that part of the amendment I do like. The rest I'm not sure of. Could we split that out? Move to split that part out. I have moved so.
We have a motion to divide the question, and where would you like it divided, Representative Gusendorf?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm interested in page 9, line 17, and where determination shall be written findings. That'd be the first part.
Okay. Are there objections to dividing the question? Okay, the question then has been divided, and we'll call it 3A. It's page 9, line 17, after making A, delete determination and insert written findings. Is that correct? Any discussion on that motion? Representative Parnell.
I just wanted to ask the department if this, if it places any kind of undue burden on them, if there's a term of art behind written finding, or if it's just what it says, a written finding. In other words, is there a statutory scheme that you have to go through for written finding, or is it just a written finding, like a letter statement?
This is just fine. It adds some genuineness to the public process, and a written finding is not troublesome whatsoever. It's an improvement.
Yeah, are there any objections? Hearing none, then 3A has been adopted. We're now on 3B, which would be the rest of the original amendment number 3, starting on page 9, line 18, after state. Any further discussion?
No, could I ask if the department objects to that?
No, yes, I think that's just fine. That certainly an examination of whether there's another way to mitigate rather than the intrusion of logging is just fine.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Henley?
You know, I don't know. I think the department made a good case for not eliminating Section B of this, which the bottom part does.
Well, let's further divide the question.
So it sounds like he's not concerned about what. Let me ask the question then. What other ways are you going to mitigate the substantial economic loss? And what?
Mr. Chairman, we have in the past, Division of Forestry has, for instance, used controlled burns followed by planting, and that doesn't require roading, therefore, in some places where particularly groups of the public are very concerned about temporary winter roads, control burns and replanting is preferable to logging and replanting. So there are methods available. They're more expensive than logging, but sometimes preferable.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Terrio?
What did you see out the window?
Do we have a motion now to separate?
No, not yet.
So I move that we separate out into 3B, the section that is page 9, line 18, after state.
Okay. So we now have 3B1 and 3B2.
See.
3B1 being page 9, line 19, after state, insert, and that the loss of substantial economic value cannot be practically mitigated by other means. Is that correct? Are there objections to that?
Yes, I'll object. Mr. Chairman, the only reason I say that is I think the department may offer these sales, and if there's some economic value, I hate to see them burn it up. And that's my only concern. I'd like to see it logged, and so I would just leave it the way it is. The discretion's with it. They don't have to offer these salvage sales. So,
and
in the public comment, they have problems with the community. They can take that into consideration.
Okay, Representative Martin?
Well, I'm afraid also the more we add into this, the more questions that inhibit the administration from doing a job that needs to be done. And we see over the years, every time the people that are the tree huggers can get a chance to stop a dead tree from falling over, they would do it. And I'm afraid that the more reports we demand and more evaluations we demand, Mother Nature does her thing and we're losing the forest.
I was going to object too, Representative Martin, until you start name calling here. but I'm still going to object.
Mr. Chairman, very quickly.
Yes, Representative Gusendorf.
Yeah, there are certain areas that there is no way that you can get a road in and practically do some of the things that you want to do commercially, and it might be best for the forest if there was a control burn in some of those areas. It would simply make more sense, and I would like for them to do that, not be hung up, well, we won't do anything there, or we'll have a sale. and that would be the choice. They wouldn't do anything in there.
Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Risendorf.
Yes.
Representative Hanlon.
No.
Representative Hoffman.
Yes.
Representative Martin.
No.
Representative Navarre.
Yes.
Representative Parnell.
No.
Representative Terrio.
No.
Representative Larson.
No.
4 yay, 6 nay.
Okay, please note that 3B1 has failed adoption. 3B2. Do we have further discussion on 3B2? Are there objections to 3B2?
Yes.
Yes.
Any objections? Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Risendorf.
A pass.
Representative Hanley.
No.
Representative Hoffman.
Yes.
Representative Martin.
No.
Representative Navarre.
Yes.
Representative Parnell.
No.
Representative Terrio.
No.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Larson.
No.
Representative Grusendorf.
No.
3A, 7A.
Okay, please note, do we have any other amendments? What action does the committee wish in regards to committee substitute for Senate Bill number 339 resource?
One last amendment.
Representative Grusendorf.
Move to strike section 12.
Move to strike section 12.
That section. Mr. Chairman, I like the present policy that we have for private land disposals, and that when there is a land disposal, the auction will be held at that site. I agree with the other parts of it where you don't necessarily have to be present at that, but I think it has served us well. It has been more fair and more opportunity for those that are local residents to take part and understand what is sale and be ready to put their money up and use the land.
Representative Brown?
Well, I agree with that. As a general matter, we would like to do that, but what's the effect on the department because of if they're just here proposing this because the court has ruled that we can't run them on this basis, and I'm just wondering what is the problem that's created by not changing the statute to conform with what the court has ruled?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, when I was going through trying to understand this, the practical effect, according to Ron Swanson, is that they would have fewer land disposals because of the cost of having to do it at local communities. Fact that people don't have to be present, you know, physically present at the sales, we thought would mitigate the shall versus may. It will reduce the number of land disposals.
A further discussion in regards to the motion to delete section 12. You ready for the question? Would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Grusendorf.
Yes.
Representative Hanley.
No.
Representative Hoffman.
Yes.
Representative Martin.
No.
Representative Navarre.
No. Section 8.
Representative Parnell.
No.
Representative Terrio.
No.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Foster.
No.
Representative Larson.
No.
3A, 7A.
Okay, what action does the committee wish in regards to Senate Bill 339, Finance Amended?
Mr. Chairman, I move the bill from committee with individual recommendation.
And the accompanying zero fiscal note?
Fiscal note.
Do we have any objections? Seeing none, then this bill has moved from committee, and we will stand in recess to call here. Here we'll keep somebody monitoring the ballgame for us. The bill we have before us today is committee substitute for House Bill 338 Finance. It has a zero fiscal note from the Department of Revenue, and it's an act relating to the issue of acquisition and construction of the Northern Crossroads Recovery Center for the Ship Creek Landing Project, relating to a study of the feasibility and financial viability of the Northern Crossroads Discovery Center, relating to construction of the Northern Crossroads Discovery Center, and providing for an effective date. And this bill was waived from the Labor and Commerce Committee, so this is the first hearing on this bill in the House. And here to speak on this bill is?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Josh Fink. I'm aide to Senator Kelly, who was in Senate Finance, unable to attend. I'll be as brief as possible. Senate Bill 338 authorizes the Alaska Railroad Corporation to sell $55 million in tax-exempt non-recourse revenue bonds to be loaned to a public or private entity for the acquisition, design, and construction of the North Discovery Center at Ship Creek Landings, provided that the following two conditions are met. The potential developer pays for a feasibility and financial viability study to be performed by a business selected by the Railroad Corporation. And secondly, that the Railroad Corporation Board of Directors reviews the feasibility study and determines the project is viable. Payment of the bonds and interest would be made solely with assets and revenues received from the owner-operator of the facility, and the Railroad Corporation is strictly prohibited from using any other financing or financial vehicle to repay the bonds. Given that provision, legal counsel here has told us, and we've got another opinion, these bonds would in no way affect the state's bond rating. In addition, on the face of each bond, a statement will indicate that the Railroad Corporation is not obligated to pay the bonds or interest except from revenues and assets from the facility, Crossroads facility, that neither the faith or credit nor taxing power of the state or political subdivision is pledged towards bond payment, and that the issuance of the bonds does not create a legal or moral obligation of the state, nor is dependent on an appropriation from the Alaska legislature. So it will be real clear to those purchasing the bonds in the bond market that Alaska is not on the line nor any of its political subdivisions for repayment. And lastly, prior to the start of construction, the developer would be required to post a payment and completion bond in favor of the Railroad Corporation to ensure project completion or bond repayment. I can answer any questions.
Do you have any questions, Mr. Fink? Representative Brown.
Thank you. Is the study that's required by Section 2 of the Act required to be done before bonds can be issued? Because I notice it has the caveat that they shall do this study if a private party enters into an agreement to pay the cost of the study. What if the private party didn't agree to pay the cost of the study? Could they still proceed to issue the bonds even without the feasibility study?
Through the chair, Representative Brown, in Section 1, on line 11, there's an if halfway through that line that conditions it. They're allowed to issue the bonds if the Board of Directors determines after completion of the study conducted under Section 2 that it's viable. So no, they cannot issue the bonds until that study has been completed and approved.
Can I continue?
Yes, I just want to note, too, that we have Mr. Mark online to answer any questions that any members may have. So if there's any technical questions you need help on.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown, please continue.
Thank you. The $55 million that's referenced on page 1, line 10, during the discussions of this project over the last interim, the Lopatins indicated that they did not intend to issue more than $40 million in bonds and that they would be providing private equity of $9 to $14 million to make up the balance of the cost for the project. So why are we giving authorization for $55 million when $40 million is the stated intention?
Through the chair, Representative Brown, I'll give a partial answer, then maybe Mr. O'Patton can address that further. The language is not more than $55 million. That would be the ceiling. And in Senate Finance, they did indicate as well that it would be $19 to $14 million in their equity. As to why that figure is $55 million, I believe Mr. O'Patton would be better able to address that.
Okay, Mark, if you may, go ahead.
Turn it up a little higher.
So the 55
the equity will be whatever is required by the bond market.
Okay, are there any other questions of either Josh or Mark? Representative Martin.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, there was a federal provision that required Alaska to every 5 years to sell the railroad, and also there was a federal provision that as of January the 1st, 1996, according to following the agreement, that we would land would be transferred to the state, and that happened January 1st, 1996. I'm wondering now where we stand with that. I've had a bill in the hopper for 2 years that fulfills one requirement, that we were assessed the Alaska Railroad value, but for some reason or other, well, not for some reason or other, the Railroad Corporation Board absolutely opposed to it in any way, shape, or form, and successfully had it killed. But I'm wondering how we are now with the federal stipulation that we're going to bond or allow a group to go out and bond, and if the federal government should renege and say, hey, we want it back, or you don't get the land, what's what?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Hickey. For the record, I'm Mark Hickey, representing Alaska Railroad Corporation. Through the chair, Representative Martin, I believe the provision in the state law that you recall about the five-year requirement was amended in 1987 or 1988 and removed. There is not a specific requirement in state law mandating an offer every so often. There still is legislative intent that it is the intent of the legislature that ultimately the railroad be disposed of. That's still in effect. Mm-hmm. And there's a requirement in the annual reports of the railroad to provide information about that. As far as activity, there is no current activity trying to review that by the railroad.
Sure isn't, yeah.
As far as the federal provision, I believe you're referring to reversion clauses that were in the Transfer Act. There were three. The one that's pertinent here is a 10-year requirement that if the railroad were sold, this is, I'm a little fuzzy on this, but if the railroad were sold in the first 10 years, there were certain requirement reversion arrangements for right-of-way that might be triggered if the railroad no longer was allowed to operate. I don't think those provisions are relevant to the bond question that's in front of you.
Okay, further discussion in regards to Senate Bill 338, Representative Brown.
Thank you. And this is a question to Mr. Lopatin. The Crossroads, Northern Crossroads Discovery Center, one of its major attractions is going to be this Russian museum. And in the backup for this project, it states that on April 28, 1993, an agreement was signed with the government of St. Petersburg, Russia, in which they will open a permanent annex of their Russian-American materials collected from four of the most famous Russian museums. Ms. Chairman, I asked Mr. Lopatin in writing for some information about this agreement because I believe it is directly relevant to the financial viability of this project. He answered me as follows, and I would like to read one sentence from his, or two sentences from the response that I received. It says, in all candor, I can only answer your questions in general terms for several reasons. First, the Northern Crossroads Discovery Center is not seeking, nor shall it utilize, any public subsidies for the operation of the museum, and therefore, as a private concern, it is our policy not to release any information regarding contracts and or proprietary information regarding any of our projects. I guess I would still like to know from Mr. Lopatin what the terms of that agreement are with the government of St. Petersburg, and specifically whether we or whether the state is obligated in any way with respect to our financial support for this project. I have wondered how a long-term financing agreement can be arranged without a specific long-term arrangement to house these materials, and I believe that that is relevant information, and that while there may not be public money involved in the operation of the museum, there certainly is public subsidy involved in the construction of this facility, and at least that is the point of this bill that's before us, and also the prior appropriation that was made for infrastructure to support this project.
Okay, Mr. Lopatin, response, Representative.
Certainly, specifics of the agreement with the Russian Museum, I can tell you we will not be asking for any government subsidies. I think it was indicated in the letter. I'll assure you right now, we will not be asking for any government subsidies for the development operation. If we were foolish enough to, I'm assured that you'll remind me of this discussion, but that will just not be the case. This will be a private venture between the Discovery Center and the Museums of St. Petersburg, bringing some parts of the 5,000 pieces of Alaskan artifacts the Russian government took when Alaska was sold to the United States. Some of the specifics of the agreement, quite frankly, and there are many to be worked out because it is a preliminary agreement.
So, is the Discovery Center compensating St. Petersburg for the loan of these materials, and what is the length of the term of the agreement?
Yeah, I don't, not having the agreement in front of me, if memory serves me correct, it's a 35-year letter of intent, and that would be transferred into an agreement. And the letter of intent does contemplate that the Discovery Center will pay the Russian Museum for bringing the materials over and for displaying them at the Northern Crossroads Discovery Center.
But the specifics are not provided in the letter of intent?
No, no, they absolutely are not, nor are any specific economic terms even called for. It was viewed as a relationship in bringing the cultures together. It was not viewed as either on our side or on their side. A way of subsidizing the Russian government. By the way, that reminds me, one of the other parts of the agreement is that there be traveling trips where they'd be taking some of the material that they have and traveling it around the United States, indicating that some similar materials can be displayed at the Discovery Center. So it will also be used as a way of bringing tourists, or we hope it will be used as a way of bringing tourists to Anchorage so that people know, and to Alaska so that people know that there is one permanent annex of a foreign museum in the United States. It's in Anchorage, Alaska, and people can come to Alaska and see some of the heritage that that part of the country had years ago.
Hey, Chairman McLean?
Yes, I had a question, and it's not to Lo Patton, but it's to Josh. There was a program that was being pushed for in Anchorage several years ago called the Alaska Heritage Park or something.
Mm-hmm.
How is that different from what you're trying to do here?
Because the
same concepts were they were going to take care of the Russian culture and they were going to take care of the cultural things. So the concepts are the same. So I wonder what's the difference between those two?
Chair McLean, they're moving forward on that. It's not going to be in Bicentennial Park. I believe it's off. I'm not sure where it is now, but I know that they've obtained another location. It's substantially different, and that will be native, and I don't know a lot about it, but my understanding is that will be there'll be a different sort of miniature native villages set up there and some different things from the different cultures. With the Ship Creek development, I mean, they're looking at eventually a World Trade Center, a hotel, a convention center. The Northern Crossroads Discovery Center is sort of the anchor, the centerpiece. It has a slightly different bend, slightly different twist. Mr. Lopatin might be able to tell you more about it, but I think it is significantly different than the Native Heritage Park concept, which is moving forward independently.
And we're going to keep moving forward here, too. Further discussion in regards to this bill. Representative Martin.
Let's have a couple. Let's get back down to the collateral that this bomb will be based on. Is that the, it looks to me like it's the Alaska Railroad assets and revenues, the collateral to support the bonding?
Yes.
Okay, page 2, line 12 and 13.
Okay, Mark, do you have a response?
Yeah, I'm page 2, line number 13, but maybe I didn't pick it up. It will not be the obligation of the Alaska Railroad or any of its assets for the repayment of the bond. Representative Mark, I thought you indicated that it would be.
Okay, Representative Hanley.
Thank you. If you read, it says they are non-recourse obligations. In other words, no recourse to the Railroad Corporation. They're payable only from revenues and assets received from the corporation from the public or private entity that owns and operates it. The Railroad may not pledge or mortgage, assign money, leases, revenue, any assets for the payment of the bonds. And there's also similar provisions for the state. So it is not, it's strictly, there's going to be bonds put out there to build this building. If they don't have a plan that shows that they can have the revenues generated, nobody in the bond market is going to buy these things. And it'll strictly be off the revenues from that. There's no faith and credit of the state, the railroad, or any other entity.
Yeah, I want to make that very clear, sir, and I thank Mr. Hanley for reading that out. Secondly, you mentioned, Mr. LaPenta, that there would be no state money. Well, didn't we forward $5 million last year for, in hopes of this project anyway, already for infrastructure for water and roads and so on? So there is state money.
Chair, Representative Martin, that was $5.5 million, and it was a number of years ago. It wasn't last year. That was for infrastructure to be put in down at Ship Creek. It's an economic development project. It's not just for this. It's actually for an extension of INGRA, utility lines, and it's not, you know, it'd be for the development of that whole area.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brown.
Just to correct what Mr. Fink said there, that project does not involve the extension of INGRA. The extension of INGRA is outside of the project area, and there has been ongoing attempts by the mayor to use some of the money appropriated for this project to extend INGRA. But it's never been shown that that would in any way be part of this project. I do believe they need to do a comprehensive traffic analysis because there's going to be a big effect on the port traffic, the railroad traffic, the people that will be coming in and out of the area. That has yet to be done, and so the money that we appropriated was specifically for utilities and other public infrastructure necessary to support this project, and I do not consider the extension of INGRA in any way part of this project until there's a comprehensive traffic analysis that shows that it's proper use of this appropriation. It's not consistent with the intent of the appropriation.
Okay, let's get back to Community Substitute for House Bill 338 Finance here, and if we have any more specific questions, do we have any amendments to this bill?
Could I ask?
Representative Brown.
I'd like to ask Mr. LoPayton, what is the status of obtaining the necessary private commitments that would satisfy the terms of the appropriation that we were discussing and that would satisfy the requirements in your lease with the Alaska Railroad?
Mr. LoPayton. Is that what you're referring to, Representative Brown?
Yes.
Nothing to do with interactive. The $5.5 million will be met through the development of the World Trade Center. That obviously will be met when it's needed, as well as the development of the hotel. And those two projects alone are about $80 million. And those are moving forward, hopefully simultaneously with the Discovery Center.
Do you still plan to break ground this summer on the World Trade Center?
No, I'm sorry. We knew in early January that there was no way we were going to be able to start those developments until the spring of next year.
Thank you.
Okay, do we have any further discussion? What does the committee wish in regards to committee substitute for House Bill 338 Finance?
Mr. Chair,
Chairman, I move it with individual recommendations.
The company bill fiscal note. Are there any objections? Hearing none, then this bill has moved from committee. And thank you, Mr. LePayton. Well, we don't have to worry about...
1994,
I see. We don't have to worry about the Pistons this year, do we?
Yeah, we had a very nice meeting. We didn't have to bring that up.
And thank you. Okay, the next bill we have before us, committee substitute for Senate Bill 310. This bill has been in subcommittee. We have a work draft. The chairman of that subcommittee was Representative Terrio. Representative Terrio, could we have your report at this time?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm just making some marking up one last CS for people to have. If I can just have a second here.
Already, can I move it out of committee? No, I'm just kidding.
Go ahead.
Pass it. That's it. Make the motion.
Did you work on this last night?
We've been busy working on this dog teams.
Dog teams. Reagan.
You feel like you're knitting.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if I can have these passed around.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And if Helen, would you help Representative Terrio? Looks where is Helen? There she is.
Yes, please.
Case of lightning socialism.
Has it been handled okay?
Yes.
Let's go ahead and hand it out.
Can't get bonding from the university. It's for the camp for it. Yes, sir. No one's leaving that. That's the way, what you call it. She tells you one story from Fairbanks. She tells you one story from Anchorage. Made it very clear in the upgrade. I just wanted to what they've done in the first place that they wanted to do. But they couldn't do without changing the law.
Mr. Chairman, what I've done is the subcommittee in their work yesterday, we worked down through amendment number 24. And took action on some of it, and on the
student
front of the CS, we got information there, who the sponsor was and what action was taken. In the copy of the proposed CS, then, I've had my staff go through and highlight all the areas where language has been inserted, and right next to it, which amendment the language came from. And Representative Brown had a number of amendments, as you can see at the bottom, it should say they were held, and I think she's had them passed out. In addition, number 7 was held open, and since it wasn't actually adopted, I had an amendment today to propose for the committees to actually adopt that language.
If you'd move the work draft, Representative Terrio.
Mr. Chairman, I move the work draft /M, dated 5/7/94.
Mr. Chairman?
Are there any objections?
No.
Any objections? Hearing none then, that will be the vehicle before us. Chairman McLean?
Yes, I just wanted to thank Representative Terrio for all the work that he's been doing on this bill. As much as this bill is very questionable, he's done a wonderful job in straightening out a lot of them.
Okay. I just wanted to add, he didn't buy any of us dinner when we were done.
He wouldn't even let us eat.
Gotta keep you lean and mean. Okay, Representative Terrio, I believe you wanted to address amendment number 7, which was held open. Maybe we could take that first. Then I know Chairman McLean also had an amendment he wished to propose, and then we could get interruption to Brown's amendments.
Okay, sure. I've got one, just one copy of it here. So I could get copies of this name. Does everybody have the entire packet of amendments? Number 1 through 44?
We have Representative Brown's amendments.
Yeah, we can get a copy here in just a minute.
Oh, Representative Terrio, I have the from 1 through the number.
But D not it. D dot what?
Yeah, 14.
D dot 14.
Well, I thought he wanted.
Yeah,
well, I thought he wanted a copy. Copies for people.
Is that a
surprise? I thought she wanted to make copies of them. I haven't.
Well, she's open. In addition, Chairman, Representative Grusendorf had an amendment last night that we failed. It's been reworked, and he's got language copied for us to consider.
We've had a number of amendments earlier that still alive, so I hope we don't miss them. So if we miss anyone's amendment, make sure to bring it up. We're just at ease here a second, waiting for the amendment to come in.
Mike.
Won the ball game, Mike.
Mike. Denver.
Make it
exactly
all
the same.
One.
So if we just call
because
it number
we have
7.
The draft now. We should just do number 1, 2.
Well, they're already numbered.
Already numbered.
They're already numbered.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And just
okay. Representative Terrio.
Chairman, I move amendment M.1.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Are there any objections? Representative Brown.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the reason that I think we held this open was to try to understand the relationship between the process in this bill and the best interest determination and finding, and there was no one present last night that could address that, and I'm wondering if we've figured that out, if anyone who's working on this bill. And I guess the, you know, having at least 90 days, that I don't have a problem with doing that, but I do want to understand how this process is going to work. As you recall from the discussion on Senate Bill 308 and those changes we were making there, we do have this other process, and that's also addressed in this chart, but we've passed that to us by the witness from Fairbanks, and it's just not clear to me what process remains after this bill is adopted.
Discussion on the bill.
Okay, is there anyone here that can help answer that question for Representative Brown?
And it.
Welcome, Rick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rick Soley, aide to Senator Steve Frank. I might let the state forester respond. It is my understanding, however, that the provisions contained in Senate Bill 308 would apply. I think the best interest findings are made prior to when you get to an FMA. That's done under the general land classification process, but I'd let the state forester speak to that.
That's my understanding, too. I've looked at 308 just briefly now in the context of 310, and I haven't thought about it conclusively, but we've talked about it, and that's my understanding also.
That just is in, that this 90 days is in addition to what's required by a best interest finding? Is according to, did you have the opportunity to look at this chart?
I haven't seen that chart, no.
This chart,
Audrey McGowan,
that she prepared on her analysis of how it works indicates that the best interest finding is on the forest management agreement, that entering into one of these forest management agreements is the thing on which the best interest process would be. So we're just adding another 90 days beyond that. That's your understanding?
Yes.
Okay. Any other discussion on amendment number 7? Any objections to amendment number 7? Hearing none, then number 7 has been adopted. And next we come to
my amendment.
Kimberly McLean?
Do you have my amendment?
Yeah, well, we call that amendment number 25.
That was number
16.
In the original amendment.
I see.
I would like to, it failed yesterday, and I would like to give my reasons for bringing it before the full finance, and I know that Senator Frank opposes the amendment. One of the concerns that I have, the whole purpose of this bill is to allow the state to negotiate very large, long-term disposals of timberlands in order to attract in-state processing. I don't have a problem with that goal, but I do believe that the legislature is avoiding a very important responsibility if we do not require legislative approval of these FMAs. Large-scale land disposals should be approved by the legislature, just as we require the legislature to approve the land exchanges. The same is true of oil and gas lease sales. We don't require legislative approval of competitive oil and gas lease sales, but we do require it for negotiated sales. The same should be true of these large timber sales. If they are competitively bid, you don't need legislative approval. If they are negotiated, as they will be with FMAs, then President would say legislative approval is appropriate. Mr. Chairman, this amendment uses language almost identical to Alaska Statute 3850-140, which deals with approval for land exchanges. I think we are leaving way too much authority in the hands of a single state official if we don't include this requirement. And I have heard arguments against this amendment. One is that if you require FMAs to go through the legislative process, then no company will be interested in coming to Alaska. Mr. Chairman, I really feel that when we're doing large land disposals, especially with timber harvesting, and we don't know what the impacts will be vis-a-vis subsistence activities and other activities that occur on the land, I really believe that if they're going to be negotiated FMAs, they have to have legislative approval. And so, Mr. Chairman, I would like to offer this amendment for the full Finance Committee to consider, because we do have it, as I stated in, and I have the background for 3850-140. And if I can have leave of this body to read the statute, it's very similar to what I'm saying in the amendment. And this is on the proposed land exchanges. Within 10 days of the convening of a regular legislative session, the governor shall transmit to the President of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives any proposal for a land exchange required to be submitted to the legislature for approval under Alaska Statute 3850-20A that is scheduled to occur before the next legislative session. And my amendment is very similar to that, therefore I move amendment. The amendment number 16.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to object to the amendment. I think we put in a number of things, and one amendment that will be considered here shortly is one that Representative Grusendorf is going to introduce, where we specifically, you know, say that all state agencies, including the Commissioner of Fish and Game, you know, has the right to review. And had a specific time allotted to him to review it, the final document, at the same time the Attorney General reviews it. So I think we've tried to build in some real redundancy to make sure that it's not just the Commissioner of Natural Resources operating out there on his own. All the other agencies, commissioners have the right to review. Specifically, the Commissioner of Fish and Game has the right to review. The Attorney General has to approve the final document. So I think we've tried to put enough separate review from the Commissioner of Natural Resources, and I don't think that this is necessary.
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman McLean.
Yes, debating it, I do think it is necessary because, one, we're starting a new president, FMAs, we're establishing land disposals for timber harvesting. And what we need to do is we need to establish a track record of how these operations go. And the argument also was that yesterday that the mom and pop operations are going to be impacted by it. They're already there, and they are already getting timber on an annual basis, and I don't see a problem for them in continuing to operate on that basis a few months longer until they can get legislative approval. Mr. Chairman, we have the potential for very large and long-term resource disposal. I believe we need to review and approve these FMAs.
Under discussion, and maybe someone can help me, as I understand the amendment, Chairman McLean, it would take positive action by the legislature to approve. Mm-hmm. I know the local boundary commission with annexation and so forth does have a provision which calls for the notification of the legislature, and then the legislature should have 60 days to take action to disallow. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if what we're trying to accomplish here would not be better served by saying that if the legislature took no action, then the approval would take place, that it would take positive action by the legislature to disapprove the final management agreement. Any discussion from anyone on that concept? Representative Parnell?
We can take discussion on that. I'm opposed to injecting the political process into what should be a more scientific and economic determination under the statutes, which is what the executive branch is doing here. And so I'm not sure that that necessarily goes to what you're saying. So.
Okay, any further discussion on amendment number 16? I believe the first motion before us it has failed in subcommittee, so you're right. There's just be a motion here. Representative
yes.
Brown?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think disapproval and was approved and was disapproved is better than nothing, but I think this amendment as it is would be preferable to that because, Mr. Chairman, we do have the precedent of setting up our statutes in a way when we give DNR authority to make long-term negotiated disposals of royalty oil, we do require legislative approval. And I believe that all the cases where we are allowing long-term negotiated disposals come back to the legislature for approval. And the difference being that when it's competitive, you do have a check out there. And when it is negotiated, there's just a lot of room for something to go wrong or misuse of the authority that's granted. And as to the comment that it's not proper to inject the political process, I submit that this whole decision-making exercise the commissioner would go through will be a political one. It is, in fact, a balancing test and a weighing of competing uses of the forest. And it's certainly obvious that there are competing uses of the forest, and that the forest in its current form supports many people's livelihoods and provides a lot of recreational opportunity and other uses. So the commissioner, when confronted with one of these proposals, has to decide what the highest and best use of that is and how to maintain multiple use, and that fundamentally is a political decision. The commissioner will be getting input from all these people, and then that person will make a decision. So to have it come back to the legislature, I think, is very important, and having this provision in her would certainly make me feel a lot better about this bill.
Representative Navarre.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this would just be consistent with a number of other things that are injected into the legislative process, such as bonding authority for a number of different agencies, such as land exchanges, royalty contracts on resource issues, particularly that have the potential for impacting the state's long-term economic well-being. I think the legislature ought to have the funds there. That's our trust responsibility. As an owner state.
Sounds good to me.
Further discussion? Ready for the question?
Question.
Me? Please call the question.
Representative Headley?
No.
Representative Hoffman?
Yes.
Representative Martin?
No.
Representative Navarre?
Yes.
Representative
no.
Representative Terrio?
No.
Representative Brown?
Yes.
Representative Foster?
No.
Representative Grusendorf?
Yes.
Representative McClain?
Yes.
Representative Larson?
Both are Chicago.
Yes. My favorite was still would have been disapproval. So I may have to come back and visit that. We go next to amendment number 24, I think by Representative.